This is DW News live from Berlin. Tonight, the three candidates vying to be the next German chancellor face off a final time.
We must ensure that we have a strong, sovereign Europe. In my view, that's the most important task we have as Germans.
It was their last chance to make their political pitch to the voters before the election on Sunday. Also coming up tonight, the World Health Organization warning that Afghanistan's healthcare system is on the brink of collapse. Foreign aid remains frozen, meaning hospitals are running out of medicine. And a surge in global gas prices forces this plant in the UK to shut down temporarily, with potentially devastating consequences for the British food industry. I'm Brent Goff. It's good to have you with us. German elections are just a few days away now. Tonight, the candidates vying to succeed Angela Merkel as the next German chancellor faced off for the last time ahead of Sunday's election in a TV debate where they made their final pitches to the voters. We'll have more on that in just a moment. But first, let's take a look at the numbers in one of the tightest electoral races in modern German history. Let's go to our election analyst, William Gluecroft. William?
Thanks. That's right. We've got one of the last big polls to show you before Sunday's historic vote. Let's put it up here and have a look at what it shows. Now, it appears that the center left, that's the SPD, the ones in red there, they're holding strong, holding steady at 25%. Now, remember, that's a big comeback because for a long time it looked like the center right, CDU-CSU bloc, those are the ones in black, would keep on governing as they have under Angela Merkel for almost the last 16 years. Instead, you see them, they are in second place at 23%, but that is them creeping up in the last few days, and it is within the margin of error. Then we have the third place, Greens, 16.5%. Disappointing for them, it means that their chances of leadership are all but vanished if these numbers prove correct. But how well the Greens and other smaller parties do, such as the Liberal Free Democrats here in yellow or the Left Party you see in pink, will have a huge impact on what the next German government will look like. Now, will it be more center-right? Will it be more center-left? Will it be more business-friendly, more climate-friendly? It all depends on how these parties end up on Sunday and where coalition negotiations go in the weeks after that. We really haven't seen polling like this in Germany before, where there's really no clear frontrunner. Let's look at this just over the past year, where the polls are just all over the place. Specifically, look at the black and red lines. That's the conservative center-right union and the center-left SPD. Those are Germany's biggest parties. Together, they're used to walking away with something like 70% or more of the vote together. Now look where they are. Maybe they're going to end up with a combined 50%. You can see just how fragmented German politics have become. None of the parties are doing particularly well, and that's what makes this post-Merkel election so unpredictable, and definitely one to watch. Let's turn things back over to the big table.
All right, William, thank you very much. Yeah, and William's going to have the numbers for us on Sunday during our special coverage of the election. All right, here at the big table with me now is Simon Young. Simon, you watched that debate tonight. What were the biggest takeaways?
Well, this was the last opportunity, as you said, for the parties to sort of set out their stall. We had not just the three candidates from the three parties that still say they've got a chance of occupying the chancellery after Angela Merkel leaves, but also the smaller parties there with their leaders. And, in particular, they were kind of making the case, perhaps, for joining a government in these coalitions, as William was mentioning. That's going to be the cliffhanger, really, after Sunday's vote, to see what kind of coalition can be put together. So it was a pretty interesting discussion around the climate, around what needs to be done to make German industry fit for the climate challenge. But they were also talking about foreign policy, the future of NATO, and Germany's role in the world as well. So it was pretty wide-ranging.
We heard from the chancellor candidates, but also the lead candidates of some of the smaller parties. We know that, one of them could not become kingmakers in coalition talks. Any standout moments tonight?
Well, I think it was interesting that there was talk about what should be the approach to China. and the Green leader Annalena Baerbock saying that what's needed is a common EU foreign policy. Well, that's something that the Christian Democrats have also been calling for, and they could get behind that. But what the Green leader wants is a human rights focused policy there. So with that up front and centre, you know, rather more than has been the case during the Merkel years, the Free Democrat leader Christian Lindner saying, well, we have to look at ways to bring China in. We need to involve China. Also saying, though, that what you've got to do is release investment, remove bureaucracy in Germany, mm-hmm. so that German business can compete with China. That's what really gives us leverage when you know, German politicians fly to Beijing. Is if, you know, a German car manufacturing, for instance, continues to be world leading in the years ahead as we transition away from fossil fuels.
And I mean, who came out on top tonight? I mean, is it important considering so many people are still undecided?
Yeah, tonight, I don't think you could say anyone was out on top. You know, Olaf Scholz, the Social Democrat leader, he's riding high in the polls. He's continuing his strategy, I think, of, you know, remaining inconspicuous, not picking fights with anyone else, really, except on a few detailed things. He's sitting there rather sage-like, smiling, probably hoping that, you know, that's enough to get him over the line on Sunday. And the other parties all kind of, you know, trying to have something to say on the big issues. But, you know, will it sway voters at this last minute? Quite a lot are still undecided, up to a third, they say. So perhaps if they were watching, they'll have been listening to some of those arguments.
All right. Simon Young, as always, Simon, thank you. And don't miss our special live election coverage starting Sunday at 5 p.m. Central European time. That's 11 a.m. New York time. We'll have the results as they come in all evening. And join me for a special edition of the day at 5:30 p.m. New York time. I'll ask, what will the election results mean for the Transatlantic Alliance? All right, in other news, the World Health Organization has called on international donors to resume funding of Afghanistan's healthcare program amid fears of a humanitarian crisis. They say the country's already fragile healthcare system was overwhelmed with hundreds of thousands of vulnerable Afghans deprived of access to care. International funding was suspended when the Taliban took over the country over fears that the money would be used to support the new administration or even terrorists. DW correspondent Nick Connolly, he is in Kabul, Afghanistan tonight. Good evening to you, Nick. If you could give us a picture of what you've seen, what is daily life like there under Taliban rule?
Well, Brent, this is a country in limbo. I think the first flush of victory, that first heady month of the Taliban taking over, taking selfies next to abandoned American Humvees, that's now over. They're well and truly aware of the huge challenges facing them now. The fact that they've got to somehow get almost 40 million people fed in an economy that's facing huge problems, where the currency is tanking against the US dollar and most basic foodstuffs are imported and have to be paid for with dollars. I think lots of the daily life continues to an extent as it did before. Okay, alcohol has disappeared from the restaurants. Women have stopped going to work in the ministries, at least in higher ranking jobs. But not everyone is walking around in burqa. You see women out on their own without male relatives. And it really depends from region to region how these rules are being interpreted. And there's a huge amount of uncertainty about how this new Taliban regime is going to be. Is it going to be something different, or will it be a rerun of the 1990s, where women were essentially forced to stay at home and were pushed out of the public sphere? So there's lots of uncertainty and lots of fear about where this is going to go.
Yeah, that's a good point. We are hearing reports that there are divisions within the Taliban leadership. What's your assessment?
Well, obviously, for 20 years, these people had a clear enemy. They were united by their opposition to that pro-American government, and now that that enemy has gone, has fled, suddenly these people are discovering that they have significant differences of opinion. But I think the bigger dichotomy is between the top-level people who've lived abroad in Qatar, in Pakistan, who are maybe willing to cut some kind of deal with the West in return for humanitarian aid to stabilize that economy, and the rank-and-file foot soldiers who were fighting for some kind of religious purity and a regime based on Sharia. And if they see that this regime is making, new regime is making too big a compromise with the West to get that funding, they might turn out to be very disappointed with their own leaders. So lots of problems there and a whole new set of challenges for people who spent 20 years bearing arms and not running a country.
Nick Connolly for us in Kabul, Afghanistan tonight. Nick, thank you and stay safe. Now to the connection between natural gas and our food supply. A global shortage of natural gas has led to an increase in energy prices, and in the UK, it's putting the brakes on food production. Two plants, which produce 60% of the UK's carbon dioxide supplies, shut down last week following the spike in natural gas prices. Now, carbon dioxide is vital in the slaughter of livestock and for food production and packaging.
This is Hoey's Farm, about 80 kilometers northeast of London. Even though it looks like all is well, it's not. Soon it will be very difficult to buy pork in Great Britain. Baked goods and chicken might also be on their way to becoming rare products. This is because of the gas crisis. Two locations that produce British fertilizer and are dependent on natural gas had to close over the last 2 weeks because of high prices. But the fatal consequences are that not only is there insufficient fertilizer, there's also not enough CO2, which is necessary to vacuum pack food products. Without it, pork cannot be processed for distribution. But this is a moot point because at the moment, the slaughterhouses have come to a halt because they cannot continue in a humane fashion without carbon dioxide. This has led to a further problem. Every day, piglets are being born, but because slaughtering has stopped, there's no more space for the livestock. The British government is under great pressure because of high gas prices. Poor families might be facing a hard winter. But England's economics minister promises to help.
The government has been clear that protecting consumers is our primary focus and shapes our entire approach to this issue. We will protect, continue to protect, consumers with the energy price cap.
The British government has already stepped in with emergency support, adding up to millions of pounds. With this help, an American fertilizer company will be able to continue producing CO2. The expensive agreement will be valid for only 3 weeks, so that at least some of the much-needed carbon dioxide will become available. At this courtyard in Essex, the owners are worried about both the technical deficits and the future of the company. Since Brexit, the English agriculture industry has lost much-needed employees from Eastern European countries. Hoey's Farm might only be able to sustain the third generation of family ownership before it goes bankrupt.
A smartphone security alert tonight. Lithuania's government is urging consumers to stop using Chinese smartphones. An investigation by the country's National Cybersecurity Center found that phones made by two Chinese companies can detect and censor words and phrases. While that function is disabled on phones sold here in Europe, cybersecurity experts say that it can be switched on remotely, and they warn these smartphones engage in excessive data transfers to servers overseas. The Chinese companies in question have denied these allegations. Well, earlier, we asked DW's chief technology correspondent, Janos Delker, what's behind Lithuania's decision to ask citizens to scrap their smartphones.
Lithuania's government told its citizens, don't buy a phone from China, from a Chinese company, and if you already have one, you might want to throw it away. And that's quite a statement. Now, Lithuania backs this with an analysis by its cybersecurity agency. The agency looked at three popular phones from China, and what they found out is that one of them had a built-in capability to censor certain words, and it was also secretly sending some data abroad. We've heard similar reports from other places in the world, from the global south, but, you know, those are places where there are fewer data protection rules, and Lithuania is part of the European Union, and the EU has arguably the toughest privacy rules in the world, and that's probably why this story is gaining so much traction.
That was Janos Delker there reporting. Here's a reminder of that top story we're following for you. With just days to go until Germany's election, the three candidates vying to replace Angela Merkel had one last chance to debate each other and convince the voters. This final televised debate touched on issues including the EU, Afghanistan, and freedom of expression. You're watching DW News. Coming up next, DW Business News with my colleague Aaron Tilton. Stick around, he will be right back.